This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. Turkey seeking to slow the slide of its currency, the lira, including a central bank pledge to provide cash for banks, but no plan to raise interest rates to tame double-digit inflation. The currency, which has declined more than 40% this year, is also under pressure in Turkey's standoff with the U.S.
Türkiye, diğer alanlarda olduğu gibi.
President Recep Tayyip Erdogan complained again Monday, Turkey's being encircled economically and such attacks will continue for some time. The two countries remain at odds over the jailing of American pastor Andrew Brunson. The demand that exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen be extradited following the failed 2016 coup. WH Ireland chief market strategist Mike Ingram doubts the Turkish measures will stabilize the currency.
I think the basic problem, as I keep coming back to, is that under Erdogan, the economic institutions have been largely hollowed out.
And he said investors are nervous about Turkey's overtures to Russia.
I think that's probably what's troubling investors, because at the moment we seem to be in a risk-off mood.
For tourists like Fatima Ali of Kuwait, Turkish goods are a bargain. She said the prices are cheap compared to those in Kuwait. The White House said it's monitoring the Turkish situation closely. Meanwhile, the White House also said National Security Advisor John Bolton met Monday with the Turkish U.S. ambassador about the Brunson case. Vote counting continues following Mali's presidential election runoff. Voter turnout was reported low. Opposition candidate Soumaila Cisse told supporters he's rejecting the results over accusations of fraud and violence. Official results expected later in the week. Incumbent President Keita expected to secure a second mandate. This is VOA News. Afghan security forces, backed by U.S. advisors and airstrikes, are attempting to push Taliban insurgents out of the central city of Ghazni after 4 days of fighting. General Tariq Shah Bahrami said security forces have suffered around 100 fatalities, 20 or 30 civilians who have died, and claims hundreds of insurgents have been either killed or wounded. While security forces said Taliban fighters are confined to their last pocket in the city, the insurgents claim to control most of it. The Syrian government Monday vowed to ensure the safe return of refugees. Deputy Foreign Minister Faisal Mekdad said refugee returns are a top priority of the government and would welcome foreign assistance.
Any international assistance should be given to the Syrian people, but not compromising the main principles of the convictions of the Syrian people as far as the unity and territorial integrity of Syria and its people are concerned. So we expect help, yes, but we don't need any preconditions.
The Syrian Public Administration Minister insists the government has restored thousands of schools and hundreds of hospitals, and some 3.5 million internally displaced have returned home. A UN report Monday said Islamic State still has up to 30,000 members in Syria and Iraq, with a reduced covert version expected to survive recent efforts to destroy them. It also said significant affiliated support groups are found in Afghanistan, Libya, Southeast Asia, and Africa. Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei Monday rejected President Donald Trump's recent offer of talks with no preconditions. He referred to the U.S. regime as a bully who always wants something, and negotiations only give them the tools to continue hostilities. Washington reimposed sanctions last week after pulling out of the 2015 nuclear agreement with Tehran over its malign behavior. The Iranian leader said Iran will not start a war with the U.S. Israel's Prime Minister Netanyahu reportedly made a rare visit to Egypt in May that included a secret meeting with President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi about the situation in Gaza. The government has not commented on the Channel 10 report. Two leaders are said to have discussed an easing of the blockade of the Strip ruled by Hamas, rehabilitation of its infrastructure in terms of a ceasefire. Hundreds were hurt, 9 seriously, when a wooden platform they were jumping on collapsed at a seaside music festival in northwest Spain late Sunday. The decline of the Turkish lira added to global jitters, with key indices falling for a fourth session Monday on Wall Street. The benchmark Dow Jones losing more than 125 points to 25,187. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News. We'll be right back.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A member of parliament is arrested in Uganda and his driver allegedly killed by the police.
Before he was arrested, Mr. Bobi Wine, through his official social media account, accused the police of trying to kill him. In fact, he said that the bullet that killed his driver was targeting him.
Alex Atu Highright is the publisher and editorial director of an online Ugandan publication. Civil society groups in Malawi are planning nationwide protests against President Mutharika. Liberian President George Weah proposes a one-day forum with the opposition, and South Sudan tops the list of the most dangerous countries in which to deliver humanitarian aid in 2017.
Unfortunately, yeah, South Sudan, this is the third year in a row that is actually being in the top list of the global list for being the most dangerous place for the humanitarian to deliver aid.
Riha Nazawa is South Sudan country director for the Norwegian Refugee Council. Vote counting in Sunday's Mali runoff election continues, but the opposition candidate says he will challenge the results. And bribery allegations in Kenya's parliament involving sugar. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ugandan police have arrested Member of Parliament Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine. This after his driver was reportedly killed, allegedly by the police. Ugandan police were not immediately available for comment. The incident took place in Arua municipality, where both President Yoweri Museveni and opposition leader Kizza Besigye had converged to campaign for their respective candidates in this Wednesday's parliamentary by-election. Bobi Wine was also there to campaign for an independent candidate in this same by-election. Alex Atu Hairit is publisher and editorial director of an online Ugandan publication.
There was crowd trouble in West Nile, in Arua, in northern Uganda, where there is a campaign for a by-election for a member of parliament for Arua municipality. And President Museveni was there to campaign for the candidate of the ruling party. And then some members of parliament of the opposition, of the other candidates, were also campaigning today. The elections on Wednesday. And when the campaigns were done, the crowds were returning home. According to the police, the crowds of the opposition supporters tried to stop the president's convoy. And in that confusion, there was gunfire, and the driver of the opposition, MP Robert Kyagulanyi, was shot dead. As we talk now, the MP Robert Kyagulanyi has been arrested, and more than 30 people, according to police, have been arrested.
So, Alex, tell me, why did the police arrest Bobi Wine, or the Member of Parliament?
The Member of Parliament, according to police, was arrested because his supporters, according to the police, provoked the president's convoy by trying to stop it and also stoned it, according to the police. But before he was arrested, because right now nobody can access him, according to those close to him, including his wife, Mr. Bobi Wine did, through his official social media account, accused the police of trying to kill him. In fact, he said that the bullet that killed his driver was targeting him.
I know you keep saying according to the police. Did the police have a news conference after the incident?
They have issued a statement blaming the chaos on the opposition supporters. And they have actually confirmed that they have arrested Bobi Wine because he was the leader of the people that were causing trouble and they tried to kill the president's convoy with stone.
Thank you so much, Alex.
You are welcome, James.
Alex Atu Hairit is a publisher and editorial director of an online Ugandan publication. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. A new report released Monday says South Sudan tops the list of the most dangerous countries in which to deliver aid in 2017. The report by the Norwegian Refugee Council says almost one in three of the 158 major violent incidents against aid operations that took place last year occurred in South Sudan. Rihanna Zawa, country director for South Sudan, says the report highlights the complexities in delivering aid in war-ravaged South Sudan and the impunity with which armed actors operate when attacking aid workers.
Unfortunately, yeah, South Sudan, this is the third year in a row that is actually being in the top list of the global list for being the most dangerous place for the humanitarians to deliver aid. So this is the report that is actually being launched today that is giving this data.
Well, isn't it fair to say that your findings should be expected, considering that South Sudan is at war with itself?
Yes, unfortunately, in 2017, we did see that 2024 humanitarian workers died due to the gunshots, and of course, left a lot of other issues as well. So, as you rightly mentioned, that unfortunately, the country being in the conflict for so many years is actually adding up to this such kind of difficult situation for the humanitarian workers to deliver aid in the country. And they have actually lost their lives while delivering aid for those communities that are actually affected by the conflict within the country.
Jan Ekland, the Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, says that aid workers are protected by international law and must not be used as pawns in South Sudan's conflict. Do you feel, or does this report feel, that aid workers are being used as pawns in the conflict?
Of course, this is very sad that they are actually kept detained in such kind of, while they were actually delivering aid services to the affected populations in the community. So, yeah, as it was mentioned in the release by the Secretary General, that of course we do demand, or we do actually ask from the government to actually protect the aid workers while they are actually delivering aid in the country, in terms of their safety, in terms of their giving them access, in terms of making sure that the aid is delivered wherever the country or the affected populations are living.
Do you, the aid workers, get permission from, say, the South Sudan government before going into areas that the government might consider as conflict zones? Do you get permission, or do you just go there?
It depends. Of course, we do coordinate with the government and with the other authorities.
It seems there's a new momentum now in South Sudan, now that the parties have signed this new agreement. Do you think now that this could be good for the country and reduce this violence against aid workers?
Of course, to be very honest, each time when we talk, we do also say that any efforts that is actually made to make the life of South Sudanese that brings peace and stability in the country is always, always and always welcome. And of course, we are literally optimistic that how is it going to be materialized, because the country literally needs peace and stability.
Riha Nazawa is Country Director for South Sudan of the Norwegian Refugee Council. She was speaking with me from the South Sudan capital, Juba. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 14th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 minutes past the hour. Malawian civil society groups are planning nationwide demonstrations against President Arthur Peter Mutharika for his failure to fight corruption. Organizers say the protests, scheduled for September 7th, are also the result of the president's refusal to respond to their petition calling for his resignation. This followed a leaked anti-corruption bureau document showing that Mr. Mutharika benefited from $195,000 deposited into a ruling party account controlled solely by President Mutharika. He denies the allegations. Gift Trapens is a member of the Human Rights Defenders Forum, one of the organizers of the demonstrations.
Yeah, it is true that the Human Rights Defenders Coalition is organizing demonstrations on 7th September, specifically to send a strong message to President Mutharika in terms of the state of corruption in Malawi. This demonstration is also following the demonstration that we had on 27th of April this year, of which we petitioned the president, and the president failed to respond to the issues, the 10 points that we raised. The other issue that why we are organizing this demonstration is the corruption scandal that we have had in this country, where the president is also leaked to have benefited money from corruption where it happened at the Malawi Police Service.
The president defended himself during an interview on the Malawi Broadcasting Corporation platform, saying that people receive genuine donations all the time across the world. So what makes this special?
But I think we are not saying it without basing facts. The Anti-Corruption Bureau report was very clear in terms of that corruption case. The president was mentioned in that report that he benefited from that corruption case. In other words, how can they receive the money from the same person who defrauded the government? There is that evidence that the president was implicated. And also, even as a political party, they accepted, as the president, he accepted that he received the money. But what he has been trying to do is to run away from that, saying that it was a donation. So for us, we'd want the court to clear him instead of himself clearing the whole case, because the report is very clear. He was linked, of which he accepted that he was a signatory to that account, of which he accepted that they received the money. And also, they returned the money. That's what they told us, to the same people, same person who defrauded the government. So for us, I think, would have been vindicated if would have been maybe accepted what the president is saying, if that was the court clearing him. But in this case, he's trying to run away from the responsibility to accept that he was wrong.
Some of your members are demanding that the president resigns. You have given him a 14-day ultimatum to respond. He has not responded. Why call on him to resign when the elections are just around the corner, where Malawians can decide whether to re-elect him, have confidence in him, or throw him out?
I think for us, it's a principle of the rule of law. It's a principle of respecting the laws. So the president should not take advantage that we have elections coming, so we should just let things go. Or what if there were no elections when these issues are happening? So that's why I think that the president should be the first person to defend our laws.
Gift Traspens is a leading member of the Malawian Human Rights Defenders Forum. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte from the capital, Lilongwe. Kenyan legislators are calling for the suspension of the investigative parliamentary committees until bribery allegations concerning sugar contraband in Kenya is investigated. National Assembly Speaker Justin Muturi has invited the Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission to investigate allegations that members of parliament received bribes to shut down the contraband sugar investigation report. Maureen Odhiambo reports from Nairobi.
There is nothing more to be investigated.
So let us be serious. If we want to play politics, we can play politics. It was contraband sugar imported into the country through our porous border points.
That the report be amended, will as many as of that opinion say aye.
Aye.
Will as many as of the contra opinion say no. The nays have it.
The report calling for an investigation into allegations of contraband sugar generated a heated debate among members of parliament. But after the report was thrown out of the house, bribery allegations emerged, as some members claimed a number of their colleagues received payments of between 10,000 and 30,000 Kenya shillings, depending on one's political clout, to reject the sugar report prepared by the Joint Committees on Trade and Industry, as well as the agriculture. Senator James Orengo and Wiper leader Kalonzo Musyoka have condemned the members of parliament for the alleged fraudulent act.
I would urge that in the next week or so, we suspend all meetings of audit committees of parliament until this matter is inquired into, because money is being spent in these committees, and if the reports of these committees are not being taken seriously by the public, then parliament's work will be in vain.
So you see members lining up to get 20,000 shillings, 30,000 shillings, so they throw out a report, the effect of which is to kill our sugar industry in this country.
In his letter, Speaker Justin Muturi said he wanted the members of parliament who have readily admitted that money changed hands to shut down the report. However, some members of parliament admit that money was circulated to block the report.
And we will summon those people to bring empirical evidence, and we will nail those that we suspect. We will deal with them. We will not allow the image of Parliament to be tarnished. Because the sugar which is believed to be laced with poison, you allowed it to go, and those who did it go scot-free.
We don't know whether we are taking sugar with mercury. So members of Parliament, I am urging you as my fellow members of Parliament, the time is up. We must be serious on the issue of the fight of against corruption. We must be serious.
Defending the allegations that she bribed fellow members, Wajir County Women Representative Fatuma Gedi says the report was shoddy and that she mobilized others to reject the report for lack of credibility.
But it is in the public domain that the committee were compromised. That's why they had to protect the sugar baron and instead sacrificing this. I said, I have not seen a single member who was bribed. I personally did not bribe a member, and to that fact, I cannot even bribe a member with 10,000 shillings. Honestly, that is even shame, yeah, and demeaning members.
The report indicated that National Treasury Cabinet Secretary Henry Rotich, East African Community Cabinet Secretary Aden Mohamed, and Kenya's High Commissioner to India Willie Bett, who served as Agriculture Cabinet Secretary during the importation of sugar, be held responsible. It has been alleged that members of parliament were motivated by powerful forces through bribery to reject the report. Kenyans are waiting to see if the Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission will arrest some parliamentarians. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Vote counting in Sunday's Mali's presidential runoff election continues, but the opposition candidate says he will challenge the results, claiming fraud. Opposition leader Soumaila Cisse on Monday urged his supporters to rise up. Cisse ran against incumbent President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita. As Brian Possemon's report from Bamako, voting on Sunday was peaceful, but many Malians are cynical about their country's political system, and most of them stay home from the polls.
The image was the same all over Mali's sprawling capital, Bamako. Virtually empty voting stations, just a few people wandering in and out, and many not going out to vote at all. Concerns about Islamist attacks may have kept some away from the polls in the countryside, where violent incidents marked the first round of voting in July. But in the capital, Bamako, businessman Bahama Sidi Bey says many are simply disappointed with politics. Sidibe says many feel it doesn't really matter who you vote for between the two remaining candidates. Nothing will change. Better to stay home. And that's what many have done, he says. Normally, it would take more than an hour for me to come to this part of town where I cast my vote, says Sidibe. But today, I did it in 10 minutes. Others stayed away because they felt the election would be rigged. A few hundred protesters gathered in downtown Bamako on the eve of the poll to make that point. Teacher Fatoumata Diarra said she was protesting against election fraud. She told VOA the first round of results was due to vote rigging, and that had to be stopped in this second and last round. Diarra claimed votes had been bought with money and that falsified and fictitious supporters had cast their votes under different names. Authorities deny there was any vote fixing, and while 18 of 23 opposition candidates claimed irregularities in the first round, little evidence of widespread voter fraud has so far emerged. But transparency remains most important in the minds of many election observers, especially the European Union. The EU observer mission's leader, Italian politician Cécile Kyenge, noted some delays in the first round.
Je renouvelle aussi notre appel en fin de journée et je rappelle aussi que au premier tour.
We had demanded the publication of the results for each polling station, Kyenge recalled. A request that was finally granted by the Malian Ministry of Territorial Administration that calls the provisional results. The other request was the publication of the electoral lists. This will enhance the election's transparency, says Kyenge. The first results from the presidential runoff are expected Tuesday, and the final results will probably not be known until the end of the week. But President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita is expected to win a second term over opposition leader Soumaila Cisse. Keita took 41% of the vote in the first round. Bram Postumus for VOA News, Bamako.
Liberian President George Mani Weah has proposed a one-day national forum between his government and the country's opposition parties to advance ideas and promote a spirit of national unity. The proposal comes as the opposition has been criticizing the government over its management of the economy. Eugene Fangon is the Deputy Minister of Information for Press and Public Relations.
The president has always been a unifier. As you may recall, he served as peace ambassador under the last administration, where he campaigned vigorously for peace and unity. Again, we're just from election. We know that everyone somewhat is battered and bruised, and some people, you know, lost and what have you. But we're all Liberians. And so the one-day forum is aimed at shaping the future of Liberia. And our president is noted for bringing Liberians together in the interests of our country. And so definitely what you heard today is no mistake. And that's what he's noted for doing. And you cannot form a policy around just one group of people, especially if the policy is to impact their lives. So the president wants to incorporate each and every Liberian, regardless of their religious, political, or tribal lineage, whichever way you want to put it. That's what he is noted for. So in order for us to be able to forge ahead with the PAPD, which is the Popo Agenda for Prosperity and Development, the president thought it wise within his wisdom to bring all parties on board.
The release from the executive mansion said that the president strongly believes that a government and political parties collaboration is a sine qua non for the enhancement of the of national cohesion and development. He's talking about the opposition. The opposition in the real sense is supposed to be a check on the government in power.
Well, that is true to an extent, but not totally true. As a matter of fact, under this president, we're moving away from categorizing them as opposition. And we're now being told by His Excellency President Dr. George Manuia to refer to them as partners, simply because the negative connotation there denotes that somehow they are opposed to everything. So indeed, they are also Liberians. And so whatever affect their lives or whatever growth and development is to take place, they are supposed to be part and parcel of that growth and development. And so the president made no mistake in inviting them to the one-day forum in again at shaping the future of this country. We cannot have a future without the participation of a huge group of Liberians in the name of opposition.
Mr. Fangon, the criticism I'm hearing is that perhaps this government, including even the president, is operating with a thin skin, and that is you don't accept criticism readily.
That is not true. It's one thing to accept constructive criticism. It's another to push back against destructive criticism. As you know, we have an image out there as a government, as a people, and as a nation to protect and defend and project. And so at the end of the day, if some individuals will carry out destructive criticism, you will admit that we do not have political prisoners. We do not have any journalists in jail. No one has been murdered. So indeed, when you say thin skin, it reminds me of the fact that when they put out negative criticism and the government somehow responds, especially to its information arm, then somehow we're seen as having thin skin. But indeed, this government has a very thick skin. And that is clearly demonstrated by the president reintroducing the decriminalizing laws on free speech. It's evident, too, by him holding the Table Mountain Declaration. It's also evident by the fact that we do have press freedom in this country.
Mr. Fagon, it's so nice to talk with you on Daybreak Africa, always.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Eugene Fangon is Liberia's Deputy Minister of Information for Press and Public Relations. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. And that is it for this Tuesday, August 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Come celebrate the 60th birthday of legendary King of Pop, Michael Jackson, on Wednesday, August 29th, with a very special edition of Border Crossings. Join Larry London as he takes you back through time with a full hour of Michael Jackson's greatest hits. With a career spanning over 40 years, Michael Jackson gave us plenty of songs to choose from. Don't miss Border Crossings on Wednesday, August 29th at 1500 Universal, as we pay tribute to one of the greatest pop stars of all time.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, fresh off a two-nation Africa visit to Zimbabwe and Malawi, Shaka Sali talks about the fascinating people he met and the challenges he encountered reporting on democracy in Africa. On the road with Shaka on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.